Good afternoon. My name is Adrian Dix. I'm BC's Minister of Health. To my right is Dr. Bonnie Henry, BC's Provincial Health Officer. This is our COVID-19 briefing for British Columbia for Thursday, June the 3rd. We're honored to be here on the territories of the Lekwungen-speaking people, of the Songhees, and the Esquimalt First Nations. Tomorrow, Friday, we'll be providing a written briefing on developments in the COVID-19 pandemic in British Columbia. It'll be released at approximately 3 o'clock, and on Monday, we'll be providing a regular briefing, this time with Dr. Rick Augustuson and myself, on Monday at about 3 o'clock at 3 o'clock. And with that, it's my honor to introduce Dr. Bonnie Henry.
Thank you very much and good afternoon. Starting with our immunization vaccine update today, as of today, 71.8% of all adults over 18 in BC have been immunized with one dose of vaccine, and 68.9% of everyone 12 and over have now received their first dose. And that is 3,104,143 doses of all three of our COVID-19 vaccines have been administered in British Columbia. Of those, 229,585 are second doses. For our update on cases today, we have 199 new people diagnosed with the COVID-19 in British Columbia, three of whom were epidemiologically linked cases, bringing our total number of people diagnosed with COVID-19 to 144,866. Of the new cases, 68 are people who live in the Vancouver Coastal Health Region, 89 people live in the Fraser Health Region, two people live in the Vancouver Island Health Region, 34 people in the interior health region, and six reside in the northern health region. We currently have 2,563 active cases, 224 people in hospital, and 62 of them in critical care or ICU, and 140,537 people in BC have recovered from COVID-19. Sadly, again today, we've had two additional people in British Columbia who've died from COVID-19. Both of them were people in their 60s, and that brings the total number of people we've lost to COVID-19 to 1,709. And our condolences go to all of those who have lost loved ones. We know how challenging it is at this time. We currently have 5 active outbreaks in long-term care and assisted living, and 1 in acute care in the province. Last week, I shared details of our approach for dose 2 for people in our main age and risk-based program, immunization program, using Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines. And as you know, we've shortened the interval between dose 1 and dose 2 to be at minimum 8 weeks compared to the 16 weeks that we were working with early on. And we know that many, many people have started to book their second doses, and we've been particularly starting with our elders and seniors who received the vaccine first, as well as people who are clinically extremely vulnerable. And I know that's been actively going on all week. On Tuesday of this week, the National Advisory Committee on Immunization provided updated guidance based on evidence from around the world on what we call vaccine interchangeability, which means having a different product of the same type of vaccine or a different vaccine for dose 1 and dose 2. And we recognize that many people right now are about 10, 12, or 13 weeks after their initial dose of either Pfizer or Moderna. And I want to reassure you that that is safe, and it gives your body's immune system time to ramp up so that you do get an adequate and durable, longer-lasting booster when you get your second dose. Any time between 8 and 16 weeks is good, and we know that in some cases a little bit longer is actually better. What is important is that everybody does need to receive 2 doses of all of the vaccines that we have here in British Columbia. As always, it is, as we do for vaccines, for all vaccines, it is always preferable to have the same vaccine for both doses. But we now know from the work that we've received, as I mentioned, from the National Advisory Committee, the BC Immunization Committee, and the data that we've reviewed from around the world, that it is safe and effective to have a different vaccine if you need to. This approach is based on scientific evidence and the guidance of NACI and our BC Immunization Committee. So I know that our teams, our immunization teams across the province, are doing their best to make sure that if you receive Pfizer for your first dose, you'll receive Pfizer for your second dose, or Moderna for your first dose and Moderna for your second dose. And this is interchangeability of the same type of vaccine, so the mRNA vaccines. What we do know that it is safe to have either one if that is needed. It's equally safe and works just as well to have either mRNA vaccine, and that's based on the data that we have now from experience around the world. This will mostly affect people who had Moderna right now as their first dose, because we have had some spotty issues with supply of Moderna. I will reassure you that we have more Moderna coming. We've been guaranteed that by the end of this month. So this is a temporary issue, and we are doing our best in every clinic to make sure if you receive Moderna that you'll have it available to you. But there will be some instances where it may not be available. In that case, you will be offered Pfizer as an alternative to the Moderna for your second dose. You can choose to rebook later in June when more Moderna is available, but I would encourage everyone to take the vaccine that you are offered when you go in for your second dose, and you can be reassured that we have looked at this evidence now with millions of people. It is safe and effective. And today I want to talk a little bit about the other vaccines that we have here. For those who received AstraZeneca for your first dose, you will have a choice for your second dose here starting next week. And I want to say specifically for the almost 280,000 people who received AstraZeneca, you did make the right choice. AstraZeneca is an important and life-saving part of our BC immunization program, and it was absolutely essential when we had high case rates and increased transmission in March and April. Your making the decision to receive AstraZeneca was a good choice to protect you and to protect your community, and is one of the reasons that we've been able to manage to stop transmission in our community in British Columbia. As more mRNA vaccines, particularly Pfizer and Moderna, became available, we no longer needed to have an additional vaccine in our armamentarium, and we were watching what was happening around the world, as well as the very real but rare risk of having blood clots from AstraZeneca. So what we made the decision to do was save the doses that we had on hand so that we would have AstraZeneca available for people for second doses when the time came, and to make sure we were not unnecessarily taking additional vaccines out of the global supply when it was needed so badly in many other countries. Now, with the evidence that we have that mixing and matching of different types of vaccines, so the viral vector vaccine that AstraZeneca is with messenger RNA vaccines, either Pfizer and Moderna, is also now safe and effective, and we know about the safety from data from the UK, as well as the effectiveness from studies and use in places like Germany, in Spain, etc. So people who received AstraZeneca in March and April, you have two choices now. You can receive a second dose of AstraZeneca vaccine, and we will ensure that we have enough AstraZeneca available for everybody who wants to receive their second dose of AstraZeneca. And this, we've been working with the Pharmacies Association and making sure that we have operationally and logistically the ability to get vaccine to pharmacies. So people who received AstraZeneca and want to receive your second dose of AstraZeneca after at least 8 weeks, it will be available to you through pharmacies. And that will be starting on Monday. We're shipping out over the next few days. And the pharmacy where you received your vaccine will be in contact with you to set up those appointments. And I'm asking you, please, do not call the pharmacies. We are working it through. Almost everybody who received AstraZeneca is in our registration system already. If you're concerned about that, you can go in to get vaccinated and check. And we are working with the pharmacies to make sure that they can effectively and efficiently call you and schedule you for your second dose when it's ready and when you're due. The other option that you have, if you wish to, is to receive a messenger RNA as your dose two. Again, after 8 weeks minimum, and there's some evidence that waiting for both of these to 12 or 13 weeks is somewhat better. You can receive a dose of the messenger RNA, so Pfizer or Moderna, through our mass clinics across the province. So you can expect to receive a text or email inviting you to book about 8 weeks, a minimum of 8 weeks, after your first dose. And invites will start to go out this Monday. So it takes time for us to get all the logistics worked with all of the pharmacies across the province that are working with us on this. If you received your vaccine at a pharmacy, they will contact you. Please do not call them. We know that sometimes it can be anxiety provoking, but they have a system that they're putting in place, and we're working with them to ensure that they will be able to connect to people in sequential order of when you received your vaccine. They will not be accepting appointments if you call them. If you choose the mRNA vaccine, Pfizer or Moderna, you can use the booking invite for your second dose through the Immunize BC platform. So that is what will start to happen starting next week and will roll out over the sequential weeks. As we all know, and I know I've heard from many people, our clinics are very busy, and that is a good thing. It means lots of people in British Columbia are getting vaccinated every day. We have plenty of supply, and the deliveries are coming in every week. But I can tell you, the number of appointments that we have in our mass clinics match the available doses that we have every week. And the clinic teams are using every last dose. We've talked before about the schedules. We have now regular schedules with Pfizer. They usually arrive on Monday afternoons or Tuesday mornings. And that means that through the weekend, we have to be very careful in making sure that we're titrating every dose. We know with some of the drop-in programs and the pop-up clinics that we've had, or the low-access clinics, we can use vaccine very quickly. And those are titrated to make sure that by Monday afternoon, we have very little left. And we would be able to immunize another 100,000 people a week if we had vaccine supplies. But right now, every appointment is titrated to the vaccine that we have coming in every week. So when you're invited to book either your first or your second vaccine, it may be a few weeks ahead that you will get your appointment. Clinics have been accepting youth drop-ins, as we know, when children come in with their parents or a trusted adult. But we recommend that you book everybody, no matter their age, so that we can make sure we have enough vaccine at every clinic as we go on. As I mentioned, we know that the minimum 8 weeks is okay, but there is no risk to waiting a little bit longer, and in some cases it gives your immune system a chance to ramp up and then get extra protection from the booster, from the second dose. I will also say we will have enough vaccine for everybody to receive their first and their second dose by the end of summer, and very likely much before that. So we all need to be patient, and we know how exciting it is to get protected through vaccination. We know how effective these vaccines are and the difference they're making in us getting through this pandemic and moving on to the next stages of restart here in BC. We're making great strides, and we want to keep that momentum going. There is enough supply for everyone, and we want to get everyone fully vaccinated as soon as possible. Your second dose is just as important as the first dose. So yes, it is important that you get both. And of course, if you haven't already done so, please make sure you're registered, and that is the vaccine fast track to getting both your first or your second appointment. Today, as I mentioned, the AstraZeneca vaccine is getting shipped to pharmacies throughout BC, and their teams are preparing to invite you back starting next week. In the meantime, We do still have COVID-19 circulating in our communities. In some areas, we're still having outbreaks that are affecting people, and we know that people are still getting seriously ill with this virus. So we need to keep doing what we're doing, to be cautious and to make sure that we know who we're spending time with, where we're going, if we're feeling unwell, to stay away and to get tested. We know that we're on a good path, a slow and steady and cautious path to restarting and getting through this pandemic. And we will get there in the coming weeks and months. And let's also remember that to continue to be kind and to be calm and to be safe.
Thank you very much, Dr. Henry. And I want to start by expressing my condolences to the families, the friends, the caregivers of the two people who passed away related to COVID-19 in the last 24 hours, one in the Fraser Health Authority, one in the Vancouver Coastal Health Authority, both in their 60s. It reminds us of the negative power and the power of the COVID-19 virus and why we have to continue to take actions together to protect one another. But it also reminds us that this continues to be a difficult time to grieve, and why we need to support all those in their communities who have lost loved ones in this public health emergency. I also want to reflect on the public health emergency with respect to the overdose crisis, and our thoughts with all of those families, of all those friends, of all those caregivers, of all those communities who are so profoundly affected by both of our public health emergencies. With respect to vaccination, our teams are doing, I think, an extraordinary job across British Columbia. 71.8% of adults have now received their first dose of immunization. 68.9% of all those over 12, all those eligible for the vaccine, have received their first dose. Yesterday, you'll know, it was a very large number. More than 20,000 of our more than 60,000 doses distributed yesterday were second doses, and more than 40,000 were first doses, and that will continue to be the case. So I want to say that the week ending June the 1st, our teams delivered around 380,000 immunizations across BC in that week, in a week where we received, as you recall, 276,000 doses or so of Pfizer, and we had received the previous week doses of Moderna. So as Dr. Henry has said, we are delivering these vaccines into people's arms, consistent with the vaccine arriving in BC, and I think the organization of this across hundreds of locations in our province is a real tribute to our teams, led by Dr. Penny Ballum, led by Dr. Henry, but as well are all the individuals who've been involved in this process, from those doctors and nurses and ambulance paramedics and firefighters and others, and pharmacists involved in the direct delivery of vaccine, to all those involved in organizing it who have joined our effort. This is a true community effort, and we are truly honored by all of your service and your commitment to one another and to all of those who are filling our appointments. And if you ask, when people say, why are 95 to 100% of appointments filled in a particular location, it's because that is what we want to see happen. A note that our hospitalizations today were 224, which is down from a height of 511 at the height of the second wave, that those in critical care are at 62, down from 183. What we are seeing in our healthcare system, and I think this is evident to everyone, is a return above the levels of other hospitalizations in our healthcare system, such that yesterday, for example, we had 6,678 emergency room visits. In the early part of the pandemic, we talked about the reduction of emergency room visits for other reasons, and the comparison was 6,559, which had been the number of people visiting emergency rooms on March 9, 2020, which was a pre-pandemic level. Equally, yesterday, we saw the third highest number of ambulance dispatches in the history of the BC Ambulance Service. The previous ones had both been essentially New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, 2017 and 2018. So yesterday was the third highest in terms of number of dispatches of our ambulance service, and all in the last number of days, 4 or 5 days has been significantly above the previous or pre-COVID average. So I wanted just to express my ongoing appreciation, just to update you on our surgical renewal commitment and where we are today. Last week, released our two most recent surgical renewal commitment reports covering the period up to March 31st. The reports show that we continue to change the way we're delivering surgery in BC, and that through these efforts, 97% of the patients whose surgeries were postponed in the first wave still wish to have surgery, have had their surgery. This achievement should, I think, give additional reassurance to patients whose surgeries were postponed because of the third wave. Last week, we also announced the resumption of non-urgent scheduled surgeries in Metro Vancouver. We said we would bring Burnaby back to full operations on May 25th, and we did. We said we would have Royal Columbian and St. Paul's Hospital back to full operations between May 31st and June 4th, and we did. They're now at full operations. And we remain on track to have Abbotsford, Surrey Memorial, Lionsgate, UBC, and Vancouver General all back to full operations by June 7th. Since last week, as you are all aware, a COVID outbreak at Richmond Hospital, which has closed one unit and 20 inpatient beds. The outbreak has resulted in an overflow of medicine patients into surgery and limits the hospital's ability to use all of its operating rooms. Richmond Hospital will focus on delivering surgeries that do not require an overnight stay. Full capacity, originally expected to occur by June 7th, is now expected to be achieved by June 24th. The setback underscores why our vaccination efforts accelerate, and that progress encourages us. The chance for COVID to gain a new foothold and set us on our heels is still the work of the moment, and our battle to stop the spread is by no means over. Today, I'm also reporting that 153 surgeries were postponed from May 24th to May 30th. This means that a total, that was 40 in Fraser Health and 113 in Vancouver Coastal Health. No surgeries were postponed in any of the other health authorities. This means a total of 2,306 surgeries were postponed from April 19th to May 30th. From May 17th to May 23rd, health authorities completed, still, in spite of that, 7,120 surgeries, of which 5,598 were scheduled surgeries and 1,522 were unscheduled surgeries. By health authorities, that's 1,860 in Fraser Health, 1,427 in Interior Health, 406 in Northern Health, 1,585 in Vancouver Coastal Health, 1,533 in Vancouver Island Health, and 309 in the Provincial Health Services Authority. The outbreak at Richmond Hospital, which involves 11 people, makes it clear we must continue to use our COVID skills consistently, follow public health guidance persistently, and adhere to public health orders diligently. We must continue to register for our vaccination. 1-833-838-2323 is the phone number. The Get Vaccinated website is the easiest way to book, to register, and to book your appointment. And we have to continue to take great care in our actions and behavior to give that shot every chance to give us the best protection possible. I want to appreciate all of those working and supporting us in the COVID-19 pandemic, and everyone in communities such as Richmond, in Rutland, in communities such as Surrey and others. We have seen very significant uptake in immunizations over the last week again. In Surrey, all but one of our community health service areas, of which there are nine, is now above the provincial average for immunizations. In Richmond, we've seen the gap close between where they are in Richmond and the provincial average significantly this week, and continuing to do so, and especially an increase in registration. We're very proud of the communities of MLAs and community leaders and the mayor and everyone else who've been part of that effort. So thank you very much. Thank you to everyone in the community, and we're going to continue to make those efforts in all communities, from Fort St. John to Cranbrook to Fernie to Terrace to Vancouver to Victoria. Aujourd'hui, nous annonçons 199 nouveaux cas qui ont testé positif au COVID-19 pour un total de 144,866 cas en Colombie-Britannique. Nous sommes attristés d'annoncer de nouveaux décès liés au COVID-19 pour un total de 1,709 décès en Colombie-Britannique. Nous offrons nos condoléances à tous ceux qui ont perdu leurs proches durant cette pandémie. Parmi l'ensemble des cas confirmés de COVID-19, 224 personnes sont actuellement hospitalisées, dont 62 en soins intensifs. Merci beaucoup. Thank you very much. We're happy to take your questions.
A reminder to reporters on the line, please press star 1 to enter the queue. You are limited to one question and one follow-up. First question, Shannon Patterson, CTV.
Hi, Dr. Henry. First, can you clarify, because some of the people in the newsroom, like myself who got AstraZeneca, are a little bit confused. Will I get contacted by my pharmacy but also get an invite to book at a clinic for Pfizer? How's that going to work? And are you going to make any sort of recommendation? Because I think a lot of people feel unsure about what to do, and we're looking to you for advice on which vaccine to take.
Yeah, so you know what? A couple of things. Yes, you can make the choice. So your pharmacy will call you, and if you have decided that you want to take an mRNA vaccine, you can just let them know. If you want to take the mRNA vaccine, then you book it through the Get Vaccinated website or the IMSBC website. So yes, you will receive some information starting later today about the details of that, and everybody who received AstraZeneca will need to make that choice. There are some people who also received AstraZeneca through their workplaces, and the health authorities are connecting with your workplace and with to provide you with the information that you need as well. So it's a challenging question, and I've been asked that by my family members who received AstraZeneca. And what is becoming clear is that the risk of the rare risk of blood clots is less, considerably less, for dose two. Secondly, we know that the vaccine effectiveness, the real world effectiveness of how well the vaccine works to protect you, is just as good with AstraZeneca as with a Pfizer vaccine. So there's no way, there's nothing there that would say you should have one or the other. The other part is about side effects. We know that the study, particularly the one in the UK, where they looked at Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, AstraZeneca. So the mix and match, the true different vaccines. They found that if you had a different vaccine for your second dose, you were more likely to have side effects that included a sore arm and a fever and achiness and feeling kind of blah for a couple of days. None of the serious side effects, but more likely to have a bit more of a side effect. The other thing that we don't yet know, but there is some limited information that says that AstraZeneca, the way the vaccine, the viral vector vaccine, creates a slightly stronger cell response, so that those memory cells that your body needs for a longer term protection against the virus. And it may be that provides some advantage for people who had at least one dose of AstraZeneca. The only thing I can say is we call it non-inferiority. We know that it's just as good to get a second dose of AstraZeneca or to get a second dose of an mRNA vaccine after having the first dose of AstraZeneca. So it is a little bit about your own personal risk. I think it is, you know, our basic principles of vaccines is that you should get the second dose with the same vaccine that you had your first dose, and that's what I would be most comfortable with. But for some people, that very rare risk of blood clots is a very concerning thing, and they would rather have a different vaccine. So it is a personal choice. Both of these are equally good options.
Shannon, do you have a follow-up?
I do. It's a question for a colleague. With so many COVID patients on ECMO machines, what's your plan for patients seriously ill with heart conditions who can't get in for cardiac surgery, and how many cardiac patients have come to harm as a result of the shortage of ECMO machines and specialized staff?
Yeah, so ECMO, we call it. So it's extracorporeal membrane oxygenation. It is a very highly specialized treatment, and it was designed particularly for heart bypass, where you had to do surgery on the heart, and you needed to take the blood out of the body and oxygenate it and put it back in during those types of procedures. what we have learned, and really starting in the early 2000s, is that it can also be very helpful for supporting people whose lungs are infected or damaged for other reasons, where the blood is not getting oxygenated. So using it for respiratory infections like COVID is a different use of the same machines. And one of the things that came out of the pandemic, the influenza pandemic in 2009, is the use of ECMO and how it can be helpful to keep people alive, essentially, until they survive their infection. So it is something we've been learning a lot about. I will say that we have a very tight-knit and coordinated group that uses ECMO, and the perfusionists that are highly skilled at how to put people on these machines, how to monitor them, when to do that. And our critical care team in BC has been coordinated from the very beginning of this pandemic and has been working with both the cardiac and with the COVID response, the ICUs, to make sure that the machines are available for people who need them, whether it's for urgent cardiac surgery, whether it's for recovery from COVID. So we have been looking at the best models for how that type of care can be delivered effectively. And as you can imagine, with many of these very intensive treatments, there's a small number of people who require these types of treatments, and there's a very highly specialized team of people who administer them. So they've gone to an approach here in the province of supporting across the province with the critical care network, and done an amazing job. So I am not aware that there has been people who have not who have had issues, either cardiac or from COVID, because they have not been able to access ECMO when it was needed. And that is a testament to the teams that are working on this across the province, and I can't say enough the amazing work that they have done. And we've been following that very closely. So it is something that we were challenged, and it was stretched very much in April. But the teams have come together and have done an amazing job at caring for people.
Next question, Lisa Yuzda, News 1130.
I'm here. I don't know if you can hear me. My phone is giving a hard time getting off speaker. Regarding AstraZeneca, there's been a lot of talk about the expiration dates, knowing that it's coming near the end of June. What will happen with that? Is there enough time to get those 200,000 odd shots into arms? And what are some of the factors that you weigh with that expiration date?
Yeah, so we have a small amount, so we're not in the same position as Ontario and a few other provinces where they had a lot that was expiring at the end of May. So that was the concern about the expiration dates last week. And Health Canada reviewed the stabilization data. So one of the things things about new vaccines is they tend to have a very short expiration date because we don't have a lot of data on how long they last and how long they're stable for. As we're using these and as more and more months go by, we get more and more information about that. So Health Canada had data from the company about stability over a longer period of time. And, you know, this is not just a Canadian problem. We're seeing these issues in places like Africa as well. So they were able to extend the expiration date for that lot. We do not have any of that lot left in BC. We use that all up. The doses that we have a small amount in the 20,000 dose range that are expiring in June, June 27th and June 30th. So that's the soonest that we have, and we are quite confident that starting next week, when people are due for second doses, there's enough that we'll be using that up first. The rest of the 150,000 doses that we have on hand don't expire until later in the summer. So that's not an issue for us. If we do find that we're getting close to June 27th, I know Health Canada is looking at that specific lot as well to see if it's if we have enough stability data that can be extended. But I expect that we will be putting that AstraZeneca into arms starting on Monday.
Lisa, do you have a follow-up?
I'm wondering, with looking at the vaccination rates where we're at right now, 71.8% 18 plus, and knowing that 70% is the target for the big change on July 1st, is it looking like that's a done deal, that we're going to be able to go to phase three on July 1st?
The minister's laughing because that's the minimum. So as we've said all along, it's not only how protected we are, how much immunization that we have in. It's looking at the transmission, where we're seeing outbreaks, where there's risky spots, where there's people that aren't as protected. And, of course, it's the amount of vaccine that we have coming for second doses. So all of that information that we presented a few weeks ago about breakthrough cases, about vaccine effectiveness, and the bump up in effectiveness, both for me as an individual, but also in terms of reducing transmission from having dose two, those are all important factors that we are looking at as well. So we are absolutely on the right track, but we're not going to move up the steps just on that one parameter alone. We're looking at where the transmission is, who's still at risk, what populations need to bump up the immunization rates, and it's the minimum that we need to achieve to be able to move to the next step.
Next question, Zhao Zhu, Globe and Mail.
Hi, Dr. Henry. Delta variant is taking off in the Peel region in Ontario. Are you seeing this variant take control in areas of BC?
Yeah, so this is the new nomenclature that we're now using for the B1.617.2. So that's the one that was initially detected in India, and that's Delta. So we have had some introduction of that strain, and it's on. It was initially a variant of interest, now a variant of concern. Those data are posted every week on the BC CDC website. I believe we're up to about 300 cases now, perhaps a little bit more now, of the Delta. We're not seeing it replace the more common ones that we are seeing, which are Alpha, the B1.1.7, and the P1. Those are still the more common that we are seeing. As we know, as cases are coming down, the numbers of each of these are decreasing. And the other thing that we have done is switching our testing for the strains that are circulating in the province. We were using some of the SNP, screening tests, and some of the concerns is that the screening tests can't tell the difference between Delta and the South African, the 1.1351 strains. So we have gone now to doing whole genome sequencing on all of the new cases every day, so we can tell exactly what strains are circulating in our province, and that's the information that we're posting on a weekly basis. So we have not seen it replace others, as we see our cases are still coming down. It has been transmitted in a number of clusters and one outbreak in a care home that we're watching very carefully. But we've also learned that no matter what strain of the virus that we're seeing, the measures that we take to reduce transmission are the same, and they work. And so far, we've been watching very carefully the vaccine effectiveness. And having two doses of vaccine continues to be very effective against all of the strains that we're seeing in the province. Obviously, we're going to be watching that very carefully, too.
Zhao, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. I'm wondering, would there be a move to target second vaccine doses to Fraser Health?
So the second vaccine doses are being targeted in the same order as you receive first vaccine doses. And that's because our program was based on risk. And that means the oldest people received vaccine first, and people who had conditions that made them more likely to have severe illness. And so we also did start our immunization programs in the Lower Mainland, where we were seeing the most transmission. So by way of the prioritization of our programs, the people within Fraser and Vancouver Coastal will be first in line to receive their second doses as well.
Next question, Richard Zussman, Global News.
Dr. Henry, the province's mantra has always been take the first dose offered to you. Based on what you've set up here for AstraZeneca, do you believe that people will have access to the vaccine sooner in a pharmacy than in a clinic based on what you've said about clinics being busy? Like, should people who received AstraZeneca expect to get a pharmacy appointment for AstraZeneca before an mRNA appointment at a clinic?
It's going to vary. So it's going to vary depending on where you are, where the pharmacy is. But yes, it may be that the most expeditious way to receive your second dose is directly from the pharmacy. And obviously, many people were able to access their pharmacies for AstraZeneca in the first place. And for many, that was a preference. And it will be available to you from the pharmacy as well. So it will probably be the closest place to receive or the fastest for many people, but it will vary depending on where you live and where the clinics are and how busy the clinics are. We do have a lot of Pfizer coming in the next few weeks and a lot of Moderna. The Moderna is delayed a little bit more, but we do expect to have a lot of Moderna by the end of the month. And if we look at how AstraZeneca rolled out, you'll recall that there was targeted programs to workers, primarily in March and early April. Then we had a bit of a pause because we were investigating the blood clot issue. And then we put out AstraZeneca through pharmacies across the province to people at a slightly older age group. So those people are not yet at 8 weeks for the most part. So it will be once the minimum of 8 weeks is reached that you'll be able to access it through pharmacies, and that will be in the coming, in another couple of weeks for most people. So it will likely change as we've moved through this peak of people starting to get their second doses in the next few weeks. So it will be a different picture in July, I expect. So it may be just as easy, whether it's through a pharmacy or through one of the mass clinics.
Richard, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, during the peak of the third wave, we were seeing dozens of school exposure notices every day in Surrey. We're now seeing that down into single digits. When you announce the case numbers, Fraser Health is way down. Are you satisfied with how things are going specifically in Surrey in terms of a reduction in transmission in community, a reduction in cases associated with schools? Like, is this what we were hoping to see, and are you happy with where we've seen the progress in Surrey?
Absolutely. This is absolutely what we were hoping to see. We knew that that was an area where we had a lot of transmission. It's a highly populous area, challenging because of the way there was a lot of people who worked in essential services who couldn't work from home. And that was reflected as well in the transmission in schools and in other settings. So we did target immunization primarily to those areas, as well as working with communities about making workplaces safer, making sure they had what they need to try and prevent transmission. And of course, the other measures that we took across the province around reducing settings that were riskier during that period of high transmission. But I think it is absolutely a testament to the communities there banding together, people being able to be immunized, getting access to immunization, and we immunized as a priority teachers and childcare workers in the Surrey area to start with. So I think it's all of that combination, and I know Fraser Health and community leaders and the mayors and the all of the leaders in that community are doing an amazing job, and we see that in decreasing transmission rates and in increasing immunization rates in those communities. I don't know if you wanted to add anything about Surrey. It has been a challenging time for people.
Yeah, and just to say, I think, Richard, they've done a fantastic job. I want to express my appreciation to to Mayor McCallum, to the MLAs from all parties in Surrey, people in the community, religious leaders, leaders of faith communities everywhere, of mosques, of gurdwaras, and so on. Just to say this, I mean, we're happy to report that, as I said, I think in my introduction, across the community health services area in Surrey as of yesterday, 69.4% of people immunized in Wally over 12. That's above the provincial average. The only one below is North Surrey, which is still at 66%, which is close to the provincial average, 74.5% in Cloverdale, 75.3% in Panorama, 72% in East Newton, 74.8% in Fleetwood, 69.7% in Guildford, 71% in West Newton, and 75.8% in South Surrey. So across Surrey, we've done a continued job, and we are continuing to work to get those numbers up every single day. And people in Surrey have done an excellent job, as they have in other communities. And we are making similar efforts, working with community leaders across BC to raise immunization levels, which inevitably will see the decline in transmission. So Surrey's an example of everyone coming together, working together in common cause. And I think everybody who lives in Surrey has a reason to be proud and every reason to continue the work, to continue to raise those levels. It's 1-833-838-2323, and you can press 4 to get services in other languages.
Next question, Gordon Hoekstra, Vancouver Sun.
Thanks for taking my question. I'm just wondering, in the next week or two, I mean, it looks like British Columbia is going to approach 80% of people being vaccinated, 12 and up. What does herd immunity look like in BC? Is there a number that province is targeting, and is it even possible?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of discussion about that, I think. I know the modelers have been obsessed with the idea. And I think there's a whole bunch of things that we need to think about around what is community immunity, as I prefer to call it, or herd immunity. And partly it is a reflection of the transmissibility of the virus. And we know that a number of the new circulating strains are more transmissible. The other thing that we are concerned about and that we'll need to watch very carefully, particularly as we go into the fall, is if strains emerge around the world or here that have that our antibodies from vaccine are no longer as effective against. So those are some of the things that we need to think about when we're looking at the concept. What we do know from the effectiveness studies and from looking at different communities, that even after a single dose, getting things down to a low enough level that it stops or interrupts transmission means that we can manage individual cases or individual clusters from public health's perspective. So it is a balancing of protecting enough people so that if it does arise, it's not going to spread widely. We're going to be able to isolate those people who are sick, make sure their contacts know who they that they're at risk, and the probability of a contact getting sick will go down with the more of them that are immunized. So it's looking at all of those different parameters. Right now, we know that the risk of having widespread infections, explosive infections, goes down quite dramatically at about 70-75%. And we've seen that in communities like Prince Rupert and others. But we always have this unknown about the changing of the virus and how it changes both internationally and here in the province. The risk goes down the less transmission we have, but we need to watch that really carefully. So in terms of a number, we want to get everybody immunized because that's our best wall of defense around the province entirely. So everybody who is able to be immunized, we'd like to get it to 100% of right now, children and adults 12 and up. We know that's not necessarily possible, but the higher, the better. and the modeling helps us understand that as well. You know, we know that the risk of things taking off or even having more severe illness in people goes down dramatically at 75, but it even goes down even more once you get to 90, and that protects even more people. So our aim of our program is to get everybody to make sure they have access to vaccine and that they're able to get both the first dose and, really importantly, the second dose. We're learning more and more that that more durable and higher protection really comes about a week or two after the second dose too. So now we're in the position where that's important for all of us. And that's what's going to get us through next fall as best we can. So our aims right now are to get as many people as best protection as possible, because that protects all of us, and to drive down our transmission and the circulation of the virus in the community as much as we possibly can. And that's the goal for the next few months.
Gordon, do you have a follow-up?
I do. You know, obviously there are some people who are hesitant to take the vaccine for various reasons, and some who may face some barriers. Has the province been able to, you know, identify who those people might be, or the barriers or hesitancies, and how you might reach those people so they might get a vaccine?
Yeah, so this is something that we've spent quite a bit of time on for years and years, and we're using some of that data from the Vaccine Evaluation Center. We've had a team at the immunization program and our BC Immunization Committee here in BC that have been looking at these types of questions for a long time, and it is something we look at across the country as well. So we know there's what we call it the three C's. So there's complacency. And we know that that's an issue for some people. It's not that they're against vaccines. It's just that, well, you know, it's not that big a deal. And if it's hard for me to get there, I'm not going to do it. And that's one of the things that we're trying to make it available in way more places and make it easy for people. And to raise that awareness of how important it is that it's not just for you, and you may not feel you're at risk of COVID and don't really care about it, but it's for your community as well, because it means that we can best protect everybody. And it also means you'll get your life back in many ways. And there's confidence, so people who are confident that the vaccines are safe and effective, and part of that is us providing as much information as we know about vaccines, talking about why we think it's safe to mix and match, for example, what we know about how well they work, what we know about adverse events that happen after immunization, about safety, and all of that information is things that we're putting out for people, making sure that your healthcare provider has that information so that you can ask them questions. And that's a lot of the work that we're doing right now. And the third one is convenience. And right now, we're not seeing a lot of vaccine people who just don't want vaccine. It's much more about, is it easy for me to get? Do I have to take time off work? Where can I find it? Can I get access to it? So taking away those barriers so that you can get your questions answered in the language that you understand from somebody that you trust, and that the vaccine is brought to you as much as possible. So what we call opportunities for immunization. We don't want to pass any of those up. So we are absolutely using all of those things to understand where we're seeing each one of those and what are the strategies that we can use. And, you know, things like in the interior, they did a mobile clinic at the Saturday Farmers Market. And it was just convenient for people, and they got their questions answered and got immunized. So we'll be doing more of that as we start to see things leveling off, particularly for younger people.
We have time for one more question. For everyone listening, Dr. Henry and Minister Dix will release a statement this afternoon with the latest information on cases, hospitalizations, and outbreaks, which you can find at news.gov.bc.ca. Our last question goes to Tanya Fletcher, CBC.
Yeah, thank you. What is the province doing to increase the number of people in the 80 plus age group, or even 70 plus, to get registered in the online system to make sure they get their second dose? It seems as though there's still some confusion about the fact that people who got the first dose before April 15 still need to register in the system, and especially for the elderly who may not be as tech savvy to do so online, perhaps. Is the province doing anything to help that, or is that a concern right now?
Yeah, so we knew how many people, and there is a group of people who we knew weren't in our system, and many of them, as you say, were people who received their vaccine before the registration system was up and fully running on about the 15th of April. So we have been trying to put that message out in many different venues to people, making sure that if you aren't registered, that you can go in now and check if you haven't received an invite. Particularly for people 70 and over, you should have received an invite by now. So if you haven't, you can call in, you can register again and make sure that it's in there. And yes, it's not 100% perfect, and I've heard that from many people, that sometimes there's errors, and we try and work with you to fix those. With, you know, 3 million people receiving vaccines, sometimes these happen, but they're relatively small. The other thing that we've done is sent out by mail information to everybody who received their vaccine. So we do have people's vaccine history and their mailing address. What we don't have for some people is a simple way, a telephone number or text for them to get their invitation. So please reach out to the elders and seniors in your life and check with them whether they've received the invite for their second dose. They won't get it until at least 8 weeks after dose one. So for people who received it in January and February, and particularly in March, that is coming up. So check with them. And if you're unsure, you can call that number or you can go on and register again, and the system will let you know if you're in there.
Tanya, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, please. And for my colleagues, if we could get an answer in French to both responses would be great. Thanks. Can you elaborate on the direction for second doses from pop-up clinics, and especially for people who went to one of those recent neighborhood clinics, I think they were in Surrey, where no booking was needed and entire families were invited to show up on-site with no appointment necessary? Were they automatically entered into the online registration system?
Yeah, they were. So they are all registered. They were registered and received their vaccine and the booking on the same day. So those people are all in our system and will be, when their time comes up for dose two, they'll receive notification through the system. So yes, those were, this is how I can tell you that most of the people who received AstraZeneca, over 80% are in our system as well, because they were registered either through the workplace clinic or through the pharmacies into the system. So yes, those people were registered.
And just for your information in English, Tanya, yesterday the highest group of people registered yesterday were 80 plus, followed by 75 to 79, followed by the 70 to 74. And if we look at everyone across all registrations, currently the second highest group in terms of percentage of those registered is 70 to 74. 75 to 79 is growing as well. So I think people are getting the message, and in fact, a very significant share of those who registered yesterday were over 70. And so I think people are getting the message and getting registered in those categories. Je dirais en français que, bien entendu, c'est important d'être inscrit dans le système, dans notre système, à get vaccinated en Colombie-Britannique. Donc, et je pense que de plus en plus des gens de troisième âge sont en train d'être inscrits dans ce système. Hier, la plus grande nombre de gens inscrits dans le système, le nouveau gens inscrits dans le système était de plus de 70 ans. Donc, l'écart entre le nombre de personnes vaccinées, qui est par exemple parmi ceux de plus de 80 ans, c'est qui est de 90%, et le pourcentage de gens qui sont inscrits dans le système, qui est actuellement 60%, de plus de 80 ans, et puis de 86,9% des gens de 75 à 79 ans, et le nombre de gens inscrits dans le système, c'est 74,2%. Donc, ce qu'on voit, c'est de plus en plus des gens inscrits dans le système qui comprennent bien le système. J'aurai finalement que les gens entre 18 et 24 ans, qui est une différente catégorie, sont plus inscrits dans le système maintenant que les gens de 30 ans. Donc, des jeunes, l'enthousiasme de beaucoup de jeunes d'être inscrits et d'être vaccinés est démontré par ces faits. Merci beaucoup. Thank you very much. I'll see you on Monday.